it gets our attention now, who are homeless. And I think that the winter weather ahead is probably more of a traumatic experience for them than it is for most of us. So it seemed like a timely moment to speak with the executive directors of two of the key providers of shelter for the homeless. We're going to start today's discussion with the executive director of HALO in Racine, Gay Lorenzen. And then a little bit later, we'll be talking with Tamara Coleman, who is the executive director of Shalom Center in Kenosha. So welcome, Gay.
Thank you, Jane.
Looking forward to finding out more about HALO. I think many people have a pretty good general idea about what you are and what you do, but why don't you walk us through, give us that elevator speech plus as to what HALO provides.
I'd be happy to do so. HALO is what we call a general population shelter, which means that we do not serve one specific subpopulation. Anyone who needs shelter is welcome at HALO. We have a men's side of the shelter, and then we have a woman and family side of the shelter. On the women and family side, we keep families intact. If there are father heads of households or an intact family, they're all going to be on that side of the shelter.
And when you say on that side of the shelter, so it's not a great big open space. You must have some dividers between families, let's say, or between individuals.
We do have individual rooms on both sides of the shelter. We also have a large dining space on both sides. We're currently in the process of doing some renovating to add some additional space for sleeping. Right now, when we have overflow, people sleep on mats on the dining room floor. We do have some bunk beds that people can't access the top bunk. And then when we have families, the configuration gets a little interesting. And we actually lose bed space. Those beds aren't able to be used. So we think by adding a few rooms, we'll be able to add some additional bed space. However, we're not increasing capacity.
So, and that answered one of the questions. Are you actually increasing the footprint of the facility, or are you reusing some space?
We are repurposing within the original footprint.
Okay, that makes sense. And why don't you tell us where you're located to right away?
We are located at 2000 DeCoven Avenue in Racine, Wisconsin. It is off Taylor Avenue, very close to the Cornwolf Human Services building.
Okay, right in back there, yes. So with a shelter, do you have any sort of requirements of the people who come in? I would imagine there's some terms of conduct that they must follow.
We do have what we call shelter expectations. We expect people to help with chores at the shelter and to behave appropriately in the setting that they are in. However, we are somewhat lenient in many ways in that getting removed from shelters is usually for a very serious offense involving safety or threat to health.
I'm going to ask a question that either will sound insensitive or just ignorant, but trying to figure out if you can characterize the reasons people come to a shelter. Is it tend to be mental health more than just poor circumstances? Is it drug addiction? What's bringing them to a shelter?
I think the bottom line cause is always involves income and the inability to support oneself in their own housing. But then you go to the next layer, and we start to see mental health issues, alcohol and drug addiction. About 40% of the individuals in the shelter last year had a mental or disclosed having a mental health condition. The incidence of alcohol and drug addiction is actually much smaller. It's about 10% reported, maybe up to 20%. Loss of a job is definitely one of the high factors. Breakup of a family is a very high factor. Domestic violence can be a factor. So there are a lot of reasons, but it all really comes down to that income issue and the ability to find housing.
Approximately how many people do you serve in a given year, the way, under the current configuration?
We serve 777 individuals, easy number to remember,
yes,
during our last fiscal year, which runs from July to June. 145 of those 777 were minor children.
Okay. And what is the typical length of stay? Is it all over the map, or do you regulate how long they can stay in your shelter?
We have not put any restrictions on how long people can stay. The average length of stay is around 45 to 60 days. A large majority of individuals exit shelter within 60 days. And we do have some longer stays. We have some individuals with some rather serious mental health issues that have been with us for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of people are not lingering in shelter for a long period of time. They're generally shorter stays.
So can you help paint a picture of, you can't say a typical person, but let's say somebody came in and they lost a job, they have a larger family to support, and they just can't do it, and they want to make sure that their family has some shelter. Mm-hmm. What happens during a typical day as they come in? First of all, you have to check them in, I would imagine. So
yes.
How does that happen?
So the first thing that we would do when somebody comes into shelter and says they need shelter is that we ask them if they have any immediate health needs or medical needs, if they need food or they need water at that point, because many people are coming in off the streets or having slept in their car for several days. And then we do have to ask them a series of questions.
Sure.
And we try to figure out at that point just where are people at. But we also don't want to overwhelm them at that point. We want to get them into shelter. They need to shower, let them get showered, wash clothes, just kind of acclimate themselves to the shelter for the first day. And then after they're there, probably in the first 7 days, they will meet with the case manager. And they will do a more in-depth assessment of the family's needs. Right away, if there are minor children that are school age, we will contact the school liaison for the school district, make sure those kids are in school right away. We don't want them to miss school or get behind in their education. So after they meet with the case manager, then they would look at more long-term goals. Right away, the main thought on everyone's mind is housing. That's the goal, is to get back into housing and figure out what is it you need to get back into housing. From there, they will be referred to many programs in the community.
So you do work with other organizations, and
yep.
Maybe you can give us a few examples, please.
So we have a number of other providers, particularly in Racine County, who are very focused on helping the homeless or preventing homelessness. So Legal Action of Wisconsin is one that provides some legal services to clients. Racine Vocational Ministry provides not only reentry for people who have been in prison, but also homeless-specific services for job assistance, job training, helping connect them to jobs and job programs. We work with Racine County Workforce Development. The Hope Center of Racine does street outreach in Racine, so if there are individuals who aren't coming to shelter, they will find them and bring them to shelter. Hospitality Center, which is located in Racine, is another service. They provide noon meals Monday mm-hmm. through Friday, also access to computers there, and they're actually right upstairs from Racine Vocational Ministry, so that's kind of nice. And then we have a number of other services, like Women's Resource Center, who provides assistance to domestic violence victims. They have a shelter. However, if we have individuals in HALO who are domestic violence victims, they can utilize the services and resources of Women's Resource Center. And then Safe Haven is a youth shelter under age 18. They also have many youth programs for 18 to 24-year-olds, and we also utilize their services for our youth.
So in a typical day, here's this family, we'll say family of four, nuclear family. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get work, I would assume, for both mm-hmm. parents. What do the kids do during the day if it's in the summer and there is no school or whatever?
We have a wonderful children's program, so I'm glad you asked that question. It's kind of like a summer camp. Mm-hmm. It runs Monday through Friday, and they get a lunch. They do lots of activities. This year we partnered with the Racine Arts Council, and the kids did a lot of art projects, and then they did a play at the end of the summer.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really great.
I bet it was great.
So, but they do some field trips out to the Eco Justice Center. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of educational activities and in addition to the art activities.
Well, that's super. You must have to manage all ages because even during the school year, you have some not yet school-age children that you're working with, I would think.
Yes, and most of the time, the parent will take the child with them during the day. However, we do have some child activities during the day, so if Mom or dad needs to get out for a couple of hours.
Like a job interview,
yes,
for instance. Yeah.
They can still go do that, or if they have a class they want to go to.
Okay. That's helpful, just to get a better mm-hmm. picture of what goes on. What would you say, as an executive director of an organization that's dealing with truly a needy population, and I mean that in the strongest of ways, what's your biggest challenge?
Oh, I think the biggest challenge is probably funding the organization, finding enough volunteers, and finding housing for our clients is the next biggest challenge, I would say.
Okay. Let's start with funding.
Yes.
Do you have regular fundraisers? Do you have grants coming in? What are the various funding mechanisms?
We apply for a number of government grants that we receive. We also apply for foundation grants. Very thankful for both those sources. We are doing a sustaining corporate partnership program where we ask for a commitment or pledge for a period of years. We also receive many individual donations, but it is very challenging because it is very expensive to operate a shelter.
It has got to be.
Yes.
And staffing it, you mentioned volunteers. Now, are you primarily a volunteer staffing, or when it comes to somebody being at the shelter to work with people, or is it primarily paid staff?
It's primarily paid staff. One area where we use a lot of volunteers and could use many more is that we have a meal maker program, and that can either be an individual or a group of individuals who prepare a meal, bring it into HALO, and serve that meal. It can either be breakfast, lunch, or dinner. We're very dependent on those individuals,
oh, wow.
And if they're not coming in, then the clients are making their own meals, but very valuable volunteers to us.
Explain that. So the clients could use your commercial kitchen and prepare something?
Yes. We have two kitchens, again, one on each side
right.
of the shelter. And then we have meal maker groups or our clients when they make their own meals. We do have food at the shelter. We rely, again, very heavily on donations. The food pantry, food bank of Racine, we receive many donations from. And they will either so the clients utilize those items to make the meals. The meal makers will often bring in a prepared meal that they made elsewhere.
I'm maybe jumping to conclusion, but perhaps a church group decides that this will be the week they prepare the meals for your center?
Yes, so I think the majority probably are church groups, but also many corporations.
Oh, wonderful.
SC Johnson, Modine, Ascension Healthcare are just three examples of
So they have a group of people who, or is it the actual corporate dining program that provides the meal and brings it in?
It's actually a group of employees that
Wonderful.
Volunteer to mm-hmm. do the meal.
Okay. And the same thing with the churches, obviously.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So they decide on the menu, and maybe everybody makes things in their own home and brings it over?
Yes.
Is that, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
And the clients are very excited on those nights to get those meals.
I bet. Yeah. At this point, are you getting maybe a meal a day that's done that way, two a week? Or
right now we're probably getting three or four a month.
Oh, okay.
We would really like to have a meal every day, at least one meal every day from meal makers, and that's something we're working toward.
Yeah, that sounds very sharp. What does it take, would you say? I mean, they buy all of the ingredients and they make it and bring it in. How many people are they really servicing?
So our census fluctuates.
Sure.
Right now we have 133 people in shelter. Not all those individuals are there at mealtime. Some are at work. So it's probably around 100. Sometimes it may be up to 130 when we have a larger census there.
Okay, so you kind of help them figure out how to
right.
serve 100 people because
right.
not everybody, I mean, I'd be happy to make something, but I'd have no idea how to start with that kind of quantity.
A number of our meal makers have been doing this for a long time, and they have this down to a science.
I bet.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And I'm sure that they're willing to help anybody else who would come in and want to do that. Well, that's a very cool idea. Let's see. So we talked about funding and volunteers. Remind me, what was the third challenge? I think it was just helping the people
right.
and staffing and that kind of thing.
That is a big challenge, to have adequate staff and being able to meet the needs of clients, especially those who are mentally ill.
Yes. Yeah. Now, you mentioned you have 133 people right now. Is that capacity? What is your capacity? Or is that different because you have two sides of the house? And
so our total capacity, bed capacity, is 120. We're
okay.
often in overflow status. Several weeks ago, it was actually 167 between the two sides.
Okay.
The capacity on each side is 60 beds.
Okay.
Right now, we have a little over around 70 men, and I think 63 on the women and family side. So technically, we're over capacity on both sides.
And that makes it tough. And you said that you kind of bring out like bedroll type things.
Mats.
Yeah.
And cots.
Okay. You obviously don't have to advertise to indicate that you're there to serve the population. However, I'm assuming you get referrals from other agencies who are dealing with this population, and they encourage them to come to your location.
We do have other providers that refer people to HALO. The street outreach program is one who directly brings people to HALO. Law enforcement in the area, mm-hmm. if they find people on the street, will bring them in. A lot of the social service providers in the community, churches, just people who know about HALO, if they come across a family who's homeless or an individual, they will refer them to HALO.
I know that there are, I'm more familiar with Kenosha just because of living here, mm-hmm. but I know most communities have multiple shelters And you had mentioned earlier you very clearly identified yourself as a general population mm-hmm. shelter. Maybe we can, in our last few minutes, kind of define what that means versus what else is out there okay. for, I guess, more specific populations.
Mm-hmm. So as I said earlier, general population means anybody. We don't look at subpopulations. But Women's Resource Center is the domestic violence shelter in Racine. And Safe Haven is the youth shelter for under 18. And then on the west end of Racine County, there's Burlington Transitional Living Center. They are also general population. It's a very small shelter. So we do get individuals from western Racine County. We also get people from Milwaukee and Kenosha occasionally.
Mm. Oh, sure.
So, yeah.
Okay. Now, if people want to get involved as a volunteer or to support your organization and what you're trying to do, especially, like I say, when the weather gets cold, I think it all hits us over mm-hmm. the head. That is much more difficult, and I'm sure soon your demand will be growing. How can they contact you in order to help?
So you can call HALO. The number is 262-633-3235. My direct extension is 103. And my email is G as in girl, LORE, N as in Nancy, ZEN at haloinc.org. You can also look at our website, which is haloinc.org.
Which makes it really easy,
yes.
too, and get all of the information. Well, thank you for joining us today to tell us more about HALO and what you're facing and giving us a better idea of the services. And we've been talking with Gay Lorenzen, the executive director for HALO Inc. in Racine. And I wanted to congratulate you, Gay, because we understand that you are going to be retiring in the summer of 2020. I know you will be missed, and thanks for sharing all the information with us. So now let's switch to Kenosha and the Shalom Center. With me now is Tamara Coleman, who is the executive director, and Lisa Sanders, who is the director of programs and operations. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I know that both of the most well-known operations, both HALO and Shalom Center, are somewhat different in what they offer. And but I think it's good to begin, as we did with Gay, talking just in real general terms. What is Shalom all about? What do you offer?
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking. And thank you for having us. It's always good to alert the community about the Shalom Center and all of our programs. So we have two food programs, which is our Soup Kitchen Network, where we serve about 350 meals per night in two different locations. So we have a location in our uptown inner city location, as well as our 39th Avenue location. Then we also have our food pantry located on Sheridan Road, and we serve about 9,500 unduplicated households a year out of that pantry. We also have our two shelter programs, which is our INS, Individuals Needing Nightly Shelter, and then our Emergency Family Shelter. We also know that as EFS. You might have heard that term before. And that's in our 82-bed facility on 39th Avenue. So we've got a lot going on, lots of programming and shelter and food, but it's about meeting the needs of our community.
And I do want to talk about each of those programs separately. I'd like to begin with the housing aspect and understanding better the difference between the INS program and the emergency program. And I guess I did not realize there are actually two of them. You know, just, yeah, they're the shelter people. So I don't know if, Lisa, you wanted to pick up
sure.
on that detail?
Sure. So the difference between the INS program and the emergency family shelter is the INS program is set up to serve single individuals who are experiencing homelessness, and the emergency family shelter serves families with minor children.
Okay, and you had mentioned that the EFS program was housed at the 39th Avenue location. Is INS also housed there? I've seen nods.
Yes, both shelter programs are housed on under one roof at the 39th Avenue location, which is our new facility. We celebrated 2 years on September 11th in our new facility, so we're under one roof.
And I think that's something that perhaps those of us who, Yah Shalom Center, I know what it does, and that's a good thing. There was still probably in the back of my mind that there were still housing at the churches as part of the INS program, because that's really how you began, right?
That is correct. Many, many years ago now, about 38 years ago, we started in church basements with our individuals. And then at our old location on 63rd Avenue, that did house our families. So now we're all under one roof. And like Lisa stated, it's been a wonderful 2 years. It's nice to be able to have the programs combined. Yes, we do shelter, but we really are a program. And so it's great to be able to have the families and the individuals attending classes together. We have resume building, budgeting classes, job soft skill classes, nutrition classes. Oh, gosh, the list goes on and on and on. We want to meet them where they are and help them get to their next best place. And it looks different for each person. So they are assigned a case manager who creates a, we call it an IP, individual plan, to help them with their goals, help them stay on track. And it, one thing I love that Lisa always talks about is we get to celebrate the little things with everyone. And it's nice. Little things to us may be something very small to someone else, but to our families and our individuals who are experiencing homelessness and low-income families and individuals, we get to celebrate every step in, of their journey. So it's exciting.
You know, with the programming, I think that's another thing that people just don't understand that you offer. People just think you offer a bed. And it sounds like that's almost minor compared to everything else that you offer. Can you kind of paint a picture for me? Somebody... maybe is referred to you, if you can start that early in the process and kind of walk me through.
Sure. Excuse me.
Sure.
We are part of the coordinated entry process in Kenosha, so we work closely with the other homeless service providers in the city to, the first step is we do a pre-screen to determine what services they may be eligible for, and then we do an assessment. We, our goal really is to serve people with the highest need as a priority. So really when we look at bringing people into shelter, we want to make sure that they are using all of the resources that they have available to them. So if they have family or friends that they can stay with, then we really look to divert them from coming into shelter. Someone who has no other options, who may otherwise be out on the street, they would be considered a priority to come into shelter when there's an opening. And so once they're in shelter, they meet with their case manager, they do an assessment, and we refer them to the priority list for the homeless programs that are available in the city. And again, the idea behind that is that people with the highest need get served in the homeless programs, and we work to divert or prevent others from becoming homeless.
So some of our partnering agencies, at least, is talking about is Kenosha Human Development Services, as well as Women's and Children's Horizon. Those are our partners. And so there's transitional housing units that are sometimes available, but it's a whole different conversation because we have a affordable housing challenge in Kenosha, but that's a different conversation. But we try to partner with them so that we can get people in some of the transitional housing units. We try to, if they're working, and we try to help them save. So we work with local landlords to try to get them into their own apartment if they don't qualify for transitional or rapid rehousing or something like that. So we just try to really get them back into some type of shelter. Some type of home for them to begin their new journey of having a place over their heads. And sustained. Yeah. That's the key. We don't want them to be in and out of shelter. We want to be able to set them up solid where they can then go into their own place and then sustain it. So we try to create really good habits for them about saving, cooking nutritional meals, utilizing the services that are in Kenosha, whether it's food pantries, or if it's, you know, getting assistance with their medication, whatever it may be. There's a lot of services here in Kenosha. And so how do we get them connected to what services that they need?
So it sounds like you find people coming to you really are not aware of these services. Is that really the case?
Sometimes. It just depends.
Yes. And then we also work with them to get them to realize what services are, you know, they are qualified for. Sometimes they don't recognize that. So we really work to empower them, to give them all the resources that they're eligible for, to support what their goals are personally. And then we really try to motivate them to improve their situation.
You know, you've mentioned the individual plan, so I'm sure it's hard to generalize, but approximately how long might someone how long does it take to go through that initial assessment process and to be admitted? And then once they are in shelter, what's an average stay, if there is such a thing?
Well, we are emergency services, so usually about 30 to 90 days they're eligible to reside in shelter. I think our average is about 43 days.
Okay. And so at any given time, you're able, what is your capacity again for number of people?
So we're an 82-bed facility right now, yes.
And that includes the family services or just the in single?
That's total.
Total.
So that's right. So
okay.
we can take up to 8 families, and then but that bedding number is on average because it's we take you based on your household size. It could be a mom and a daughter. It could be a mom and a son. It could be a dad and a yeah. It just depends.
Sure.
It could also be a husband and a wife and 5 kids. It just depends. So, but we our capacity is 82 beds.
Not having been inside the new facility.
Oh, you're welcome to come anytime.
and I would imagine people can, if they're very interested in volunteering or supporting, you do welcome them to the shelter so that they can learn more about it.
Absolutely. And they can also visit our website, www.shalomcenter.org. We have a volunteer link on there, and they can learn more about how they can volunteer and or how they can donate to the Shalom Center. Time is just as important as financial. We thrive on our volunteers. We have about 750 consistent volunteers throughout the year that support us in some capacity, and that's still not enough sometimes, believe it or not. But we can't do what we do without the support of our community. They've been wonderful, wonderful for us and to us. And so we have to get volunteers. That's how we do what we do.
And I want to come back to that, but I neglected to, I guess, finish my first question or where I was headed as to describing the bed situation. I mean, is it like one big dorm room with 40 beds on this side and 40 on the other, or do you have like little almost divided into rooms?
So on our EFS side, they're divided into rooms. So they have a room with natural light. They have there's a variety of bedding types. So you could have bunk beds with 2 twin beds. You could have a twin on the top and a full on the bottom. Each room varies. On our inside, individuals needing nightly shelter, it's more like a dormitory style. So
sure.
It's one big large space, and then there's bunk beds along one side. We do have our men separated from our women.
Sure.
But yeah, it's one big area. There's a livable space where we have we've been great to get donated books, and so we encourage reading and coloring and arts and crafts, you know, using their hands. They love the puzzles. And so we have a quiet area where people can sit and read or do whatever they need to do. And then we have a nice little area where TV is allowed and that kind of thing. And so, yeah.
Thanks for helping to kind of paint that picture. So back to volunteers, when it comes on the housing side, how do volunteers get involved with that side of it?
Well, for volunteers, we're always looking for you know, volunteers to work with some of the classes that we offer. If someone has a special skill, they can contact us, maybe helping with, you know, writing resumes or things like that, assisting with, you know, the breakfast time and things. We have quite a few opportunities available in our food programs, in our soup kitchen network especially, that is growing, and we're looking for groups of volunteers or even families with older children to come and volunteer, you know, once a month or so in our soup kitchen network, and then always in the food pantry stocking shelves and helping people shop and things like that.
So, a soup kitchen network, you've used that term a couple of times in there, and explain that, you mean?
Sure, no problem. So we have a network of churches that we partner with. There's five of them, and they open their doors once a week, and they provide a soup kitchen meal out of their church. We provide the meal. Actually, we provide everything just about, and they open their doors. They're so great, and they serve their soup kitchen out of their church. It's wonderful because we can have two locations going on in the city. And so we have one in the uptown area, center part of this community, and then our 39th location. So Monday through Friday, you can get a meal in two different locations, and then Saturday and Sunday just at our location on 39th. So when I say network, it's our network churches and us.
So a volunteer would come in and help prepare the meal or serve the meal or...
Well, they would come in at like 4 o'clock. It's really only like a 2-hour commitment.
Okay.
They could come at 4 o'clock. They help us set up and prepare sandwiches. We allow each person to be able to take sandwiches with them when they leave. They can take as many as they want. We just make a whole bunch of sandwiches. And that's at either location. And then they do help serve. So they help do our count, pass out trays. They might be wiping down tables. They might be serving the meals, serving dessert. Drinks, you know, just making it a very comfortable environment for everyone to come into. That's in two different locations. So as a group, you can choose and say, hey, we're going to go and serve on Wednesday night, and it's easier for us to get to this church or that church or whatever. And so it could be in either location that they could volunteer.
Do you find, like, corporate groups of people volunteering? Or
absolutely.
What's the typical?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's not, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, organizations. We even have within a corporation, it might be a department that's doing a team building, and so they want to get together and do an outing. We've got some great community volunteers. So we even have families. Like we'll have a whole family. So it's the grandparents, the kids, and then their kids. It's everybody coming
nice.
In. Yeah, so it's great.
Yeah, and we really want to encourage the younger groups to get involved with us as well. So the churches, their high school youth groups and things, get kind of the younger generations involved and knowing what serving their community is all about.
Mm-hmm. And they have energy, right?
Yes. And I know, a little birdie told me that KUSD, you have to have so many hours of community service to graduate. So we get a lot of high school kids. Don't delay. Don't wait until April or May when you have to have them. If you're a junior or senior, in order to graduate, you got to have those hours. So come on in and get those 10, 12 hours from us. Even the kids that are in Honor Society, we get a lot of those students as well.
Yeah. Sounds super.
It is. It's great to have the kids in.
So the food pantry, you've mentioned stocking. And how much food do you collect and distribute in a given year?
So last year was 114,000 pounds of food. We're still calculating for 2019, a couple months left.
How many elephants is that?
I know. 114,000 pounds of food. It's been a blessing to be able to give back to those that need it. And I'm happy to announce also that our pantry is moving. People may have heard some things in the paper or some talk about it. We are so excited to be able to move our pantry from 39th Avenue. By the end of this year, early part of next year, probably like around January, we'll be opening our new pantry that's connected to our shelter. So like Lisa said, we have our shelter and one of our food programs under one roof. We're going to be able to have all of our services, all of our programs under one roof, under one corner, and it'll be like the Shalom Center Parkway or Boulevard. but it's very exciting. And so more information to come out as we continue to build. If you drive by now, you'll see the construction's underway. So we're really, really excited about being able to have that in one location. It will definitely create some efficiencies for us, and we'll probably be able to serve more people. So we're really, really excited about that.
And that's, you're hinting at what I was going to ask. I can see the efficiencies in terms of staffing and just your space and control of the space. But what might that mean for your clients?
For our clients living in shelter or our clients that come to the food pantry?
For the food pantry, how will this benefit them?
Well, it'll be in a much, much, a little bit larger space. So we'll be, and probably the efficiencies of just getting them into the process easier. Right now we do a lot of paper intake. This will be all electronic so they can get in and get out faster. So they won't have to wait as long. They can really get in and get their food. We will still remain self-select. And self-select means you're picking your own food, so we're not boxing anything for you.
Oh, got it. Okay.
This will give us an opportunity to really display the food a little bit different, a little bit easier for our clients. Again, it's about getting them in and out so that we can serve more people. Right now, we're only condensed to about 40 people a session, so about 120 per Monday, Wednesday, and Friday when we're serving. So we're looking to find out ways of how we can increase that, so that we can see more people and get them through. We also are looking at an evening session to really help with the working low-income families, right? Because that's who we're supposed to be serving and trying to get them in. But if they're at work, we can't really get to them. So looking at opportunities to get a different time for them to come in the evening.
That sounds really excellent. And you're hoping around January or early in the coming year.
When I say early, I'm saying January.
All right.
Let's pray the weather holds up for us. And today's not a good day, but, we're hoping for good weather and we can get it done quickly. They're moving fast over there.
So we have less than a minute, but I want you to give you the opportunity to talk about how people can donate and how to find you again on your website.
Sure. They can find us at www.shalomcenter.org. They can always call our volunteer coordinator at 262-658-1713. And they can just ask for volunteer coordinator and we'll get them connected. We encourage anyone that wants to donate or volunteer to visit our website for a listing of opportunities and donatable items to us. We're always looking for things. It is getting cold. You mentioned that earlier. I know Gay mentioned it as well. But I want to really alert the community that homelessness does not have a season. And although we are looking for things during the winter months, it's just as, homeless doesn't go away in the summer or the spring. For us, homelessness is year-round. And so we, as much as I know there's an urgency and people feel urgent during the colder months, it's for us, it doesn't change. Nothing changes for us. It's still homelessness. And so if people want to get involved and we welcome them to, or if they want to learn more about Shalom Center, they can visit us on the website.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Tamara Coleman, Executive Director of Shalom Center, and Lisa Sanders, who is Director of Programs and Operations. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg, and on Monday's morning show, we will speak about climate change with Dr. Ankur Desai, Reed Bryson Professor of Climate, People, and Environment at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, speaking at the 5th Annual Alumni and Community Celebration for the Colleges of Natural and Health Sciences at UW Parkside this coming Saturday. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program, which coaches every Carthage student to customize a career development plan. Information at carthage.edu/aspire.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
Support for WGTD comes from Pedro's Food, authentic Mexican cuisine and catering at the Kenosha Harbor Market every week, featuring their famous enchiladas, tamales, and tacos. Catering events of all sizes, 748-3759. Pedro's Food, heritage, humanity, and passion. Support for WGTD comes from